Welcome to Two Words, Wolves Pod. I am Ryan Eichten, and with me is my co-host Leo Sun. Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing great. We're 1 week away from training camp, and I'm pumped.
That's right. So I'm Ryan Eichten. I'm a staff writer at canishoopas.com. I cover the team here in Minneapolis. Leo, hear a little bit about you as well.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. No, my name is Leo Sun. I am also a staff contributor at Canis Hoopis via SB Nation. I've been covering the team here via California proxy, where I was kind of basically born and raised, and covered the team since 2020. So this is going to be my fourth year covering the team.
Awesome. Yeah, this is my second year with Canis Hoopis, but I used to do statistician work down in Media Row. So this will be my sixth season. So we're both been doing this for a little bit here. But yeah, we'll just hop right into it. So yeah, this is Two Words, Wolves Pod. Don't need to explain it, but that's an obvious play on two words, Nas Reed there. So yeah, we're going to be doing some topics here, kind of keep the segments light and fun, kind of bounce around to different topics. And yeah, so we'll start first with howl or foul. We're just going to discuss the hot topics of the week. And if we're happy about the topic, we'll say it's howl. Or if it's crap or stinky, we'll say it's foul. So the first one here, the leaked new City Edition jerseys. They are similar to last year's where they got the lake theme, but I think they're kind of making it iced out. The lake has frozen over where instead of the blue, we got the white with the blue. So Leo, what did you think of these new City Edition jerseys?
Yeah, I'm going to keep it 100 with you. I'm going to say these are a foul. My tolerance for a good jersey is relatively low. And so for them to miss that bar means that I really felt that they weren't any good. And I say this because it seems to me that they're continuing to do this whole sailor theme, whereas you kind of have that blue, that all the way down those ugly sailor ones that we don't like. And, you know, I feel like I get it. You know, there's a lot of jerseys every year, a new one. You know, you can only get so creative, but, you know, this is just lazy. It's lazy. I don't think it'll stand out. You know, from afar, you look at it as like, oh, are they just wearing the regular, you know, icon jerseys? You know, what's the deal here? And so, yeah, I just feel like really what we all want are the tree jerseys. It's like the tree jerseys are bust, right? You know, with the classics were great, but what we really want are like the black trees or the blue trees, like those remix ones. Those are beautiful. So, you know, if it's not that, I don't want it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to call it foul as well. Their jerseys have either been amazing or pretty crap. There's the one with like the red, green, yellow pattern across the chest. But every time they do the throwbacks, they're awesome. I particularly like the 90s throwbacks ones that they wore last year, but the trees ones are awesome as well. And it just feels like the jerseys that aren't well designed, they wear most often. And we saw it last year in the playoffs where they had scheduled to wear the home whites, every game, and they got to game 7 and like, no, we're going to wear the old Shep, 90s throwbacks. And so I just wish they would change the standard out uniforms to one of those throwbacks.
Yeah, you got to give the people what they want. I think it's fairly clear. This is not that divisive. Like, people like the classics. People like the trees. So, like, why not do that? I understand maybe, I don't know if there's some sort of licensing play here where it's like they're not allowed to. I heard that with the trees. It's like every certain decade or half decade, like, they're allowed to bring those back. But, like, I mean, even you think about the ones that you said, it's either hit or miss, right? Like, they had those beautiful black and purple Prince jerseys. Like, those are great. Yep. People loved them, and we saw them once and never again. And somehow we're getting the second iteration of the lake theme already. So, like, who asked for that is my question.
Yeah. And they've done a good, like, they brought back the Prince jerseys the second year. It was called like the Earned or whatever. They made the playoffs with Jimmy, and they wore white versions and they were good. They were solid. So they've done mix-ups of this. I just think they need a total rebrand, and I would kind of go back to the, like, use your primary colors of those old 90s ones, and you can bring the trees in as needed as well.
I think it's interesting because you wonder with the jerseys, like, what's the play from the franchise here? Are they trying to get people to buy jerseys? And if so, who is their target? Because it certainly isn't me. Like, I am not buying, I will not be buying a new City Edition jersey that's going to be coming out this year, right? Unless they say that Rob Dillingham is like full Taiwanese or something, okay, then I might buy one. But in the meantime, like, I'm not buying this. So I think about, is it for the kids? You know, do the kids like it, right? And maybe that's why they're doing these like random colors, like these rainbows. Like, I think about, you see these highlight tapes of, you know, youth basketball, and they're wearing these like rainbow jerseys and these rainbow socks. Like, maybe that's what they like. But for me, I mean, I don't know if I'm just too old and it's just going over my head. But yeah, no, I'm calling foul for sure.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. On to topic number two, the potential play-in game tournament court was leaked on 2K. I don't know if this is 100% certain. Neither is the jersey, to be honest. But it's likely that they will be using the court, and it'll be lime green, similar color to the lime green they've used on their jerseys. Leo, howl or foul with this one?
All right. I'm calling this a Nickelodeon court. Okay, it's got the slime, it's got the goo. I know I will be maybe in the minority here, but I say howl. And the only reason I say howl is that you can only see a mass eyesore of green slime every couple times. And this is only going to be in the NBA Cup games. And that means that we should be getting, if my math is correct, about 7 games of it by the time we win a championship. And imagine... us being able to see those pictures and going back, and it's like, what is this green reflection off the ground? It's like, oh yeah, that's the year we hung the banner for the NBA Cup up there. So it's memorable. It's ugly. Yes, it's ugly, but it's ugly only for a little bit. So that's why I'm saying howl. But what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go pretty straightforward here. I'm going to say foul just because it looks bad. It is so, the green isn't, I like the green color when it's an accent color, but when it's the main color, not only of like a jersey, but an entire court. I just wish they would, the trophies that they put in the paint and on center court look nice. If they would just do that and maybe throw, each team gets their accent color and they put it in strategic places in the court, I would like that. But it's just, it is far too much. But I guess ultimately they're going to be playing it, what, twice or three times?
I mean, yeah, exactly. It's not going to be much. It's just going to be interesting because I think, you know, you would imagine the courts will be ready. I'm thinking back to last year. I'm probably confusing it, but you know, when we had the City Edition court and that one wasn't ready, who knows? Maybe this one won't be ready and we'll be able to save you a lime green court at least once, because the courts are going to be ready. They're going to be slippery and they're going to be slippery. They're going to blame it on the green slime. You know, it's a whole thing. But I will say though, I would love to see Ant playing in his AE ones and in the lime green slime ones with those. It doesn't look like his feet are like growing out of the court everywhere he walks. Yeah. So that should be like a cool image there.
Well, yeah, it's like NFL players talk about wearing the same color gloves as the opponent's uniform so the refs can't see holding. That'll be, and it will get away with a few extra steps wearing the
shoes. 100%.
All right. Topic three. There's been talk about potential expansion. Two new teams will be coming in the league, I believe, 2028. And that will mark the Wolves as the potential team that will move to the Eastern Conference with Seattle and Vegas, the likely expansion teams. Howl or foul on the Wolves potentially moving to the Eastern Conference?
All right, so this is extremely personal. I'm going to say foul. And the reason I'm saying foul is purely from a selfish perspective of I live in California, right? And so when I live in California, I know for about at least, you know, 6 to 8 games, they're going to be coming to California. They're going to Golden State. Mm-hmm. They're going to go to Sacramento, the two LA teams. You know, once Vegas is here, you know, they'll be close to me, right? I'm in Southern California. And so, you know, I would hate the fact that they move over to the East Coast when they get good. And I'm going to maybe get one game in when they come in here to, you know, here to LA or whatever the case is. Now, that said, from a basketball perspective, I understand going to the East is, you know, easier conference, but I do feel like testing yourself against the West, saying that the Timberwolves made it to the conference finals in the West feels like a much bigger statement than saying the Pacers made it to the finals in the East, because it's, you know, well, what was the competition? Like, we're going through it. We're not LeBron Jamesing this where we want to, you know, just stay in the easier conference and just rack up these finals appearances, right? So anyways, for me, I'm a say foul. What about you?
I'm going to say how. I'm less concerned about the strength of schedule aspect of it, other than kind of getting away from Wemby is probably a good thing.
True.
But it I guess the East has been the lesser conference for like 20, 30 years now, but teams will rise and fall. I mean, the Celtics are the best team in the NBA and they're in the East. For me, it's about travel. The Wolves this year are first in miles traveled, like by plane, And they are top five pretty much every year. It's not hard to see why. Their closest conference opponent is, I believe, Denver and then Oklahoma City. Meanwhile, when they move to the East, they'll have Milwaukee, Chicago, Detroit, Indiana, all right there. So I think, I don't know how much that affects things, because they'll still be, by nature of being in the central, the center of the country, they're going to be, they're not near Miami.
Still gonna
they're
have not to fly.
Yeah. So I don't know how many, but I mean, if it's one win a year, that's that's certainly worth it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's always been interesting because, like, if you divide it, if I remember looking at the map correctly, it's like a diagonal divide where it's like, you know, it makes sense, you know, for us to be on the East because we are closer to some. But like you said, yeah, there still is going to be quite a bit of travel. So, you know, it's interesting because I wonder, you know, they haven't, you know, everyone expects it's going to be Vegas and Seattle are probably going to be the expansion teams. What if they hit us with some random expansion team elsewhere where it's like they put one in the East Coast? I mean, it doesn't make sense, but just like if you entertain that, that would be a situation where it's like, oh, well, maybe the Timberwolves don't make sense to go over to the East. So, you know, it's for me, you know, there are pros and cons, obviously, to both. But yeah, it's just going to be interesting when that happens. And if so, like, what is the public perception going to be? Is the Wolves are running from the grind, you know?
Yeah. As far as like Memphis and New Orleans, the two teams that are like geographically east of the Wolves, they won't be the selection. They're too close to all the Texas teams in Oklahoma City, so they'll keep them in the West. But I mean, it's just weird. Like baseball, the Twins are on in the division with teams like Cleveland, Detroit, and Kansas City, and then for football, it's Chicago, Detroit, and Green Bay, Milwaukee. And it's just weird that all of those teams in those same cities are not in the same conference for basketball. So they'll probably, if they do add the teams, they'll create four divisions and they'll be in the division with Chicago, Milwaukee, and Indiana probably, or Detroit.
See, if we really want to make it interesting, don't move the Wolves east. Don't keep them west. Let's separate them by north and south. How about that?
There we go.
So we can get the real, I mean, all this Toronto's King of the North, where King of the North, Portland thinks they're more north of us. Like, you know, let's just do north and south. How about that?
We'll get Portland and Seattle and Toronto in the same division. Perfect.
Exactly. Love talk it. talk about an easier division. Exactly.
Awesome. Topic four here. So the NBA, they added a new rule, that Wolves fans will be probably annoyed to hear. Many are calling it the Jaden McDaniels rule. So in game two of the Western Conference Finals with 47 seconds left, the Wolves are up by 2 points. Jaden McDaniels gets the ball knocked out of his hands and it goes out of bounds. They call it Wolves ball. They review it. Kyrie clearly hits him on the arm, but that is not reviewable. So it comes off of McDaniels, Mavs ball. There's a few more plays, but ultimately Luka hits the step back over Rudy Gobert, effectively ending the series. Well, they've changed that rule. They can now review fouls if on an out-of-bounds call. Leo, what do you think about this? Howl or foul?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a lukewarm howl for me. This is like I'm waking up in the morning, a little howl. This ain't looking at a full moon howl for me. the intention's good. Like, I appreciate it. And if I remember correctly, the change of the rule is that this is only going to be when a coach is challenging, will they be able to review it. So it's not going to be like there's out of bounds and then there's going to go look at an extra review. Like it's just already factored in. So it's not going to be an extra review. But, you know, that said, you know, please just don't name it after us. You know, I know it's not officially known as a Jaden McDaniels rule, but like that's, you know, that's a rule that in theory is like you're reviewing a bad thing. You're reviewing a mistake. And so I don't want Jaden McDaniels to be even unofficially noted as this is a Jaden McDaniels rule. You know what they should call it? They should call it the Ed Malloy rule. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Ed Malloy rule, infamous call. Sean Marion, I believe, fouls Kevin Love at a corner three. This is 2013, I think. We get the epic call. It should be the Ed Malloy rule because Ed Malloy sucks. So that's my thoughts. What about you?
Yeah. I'm going to go howl that it's a necessary rule change. I believe international sports the W has had this rule for a while with replays where it's necessary. You can't, it's like, and I always say to my buddies, it's like, it's the classic, can't review the foul, but can review the out of bounds. I don't want every foul reviewed because I think that is just going to open a Pandora's box. And ultimately, that's just not going to be worth it. But on a, like, just get the call right. And like, you don't even, I would be like, you don't even have to add like the foul on there. just like be like
change of possession.
There was a foul. We didn't call it originally. We can't add a foul, but we can properly give the Wolves the ball in this in the Western Conference Finals rule. But I'm going to say foul because it's just too late. It's just a year too late. The Wolves almost certainly win that game too. Certainly the Luka shot over Rudy doesn't happen. We avoid a bunch of discourse that Wolves fans don't want to have and still don't.
But we'll get to that. Yeah.
Yeah. So ultimately, though, so let's say they do win the game. So if they call the foul, Jaden goes to the line. They're up to 47 seconds left. They likely win that game. Maybe they still don't. Jaden could miss both free throws. But let's say they win that game. How do you feel the rest of the West Finals goes from there? Does something change?
Oh, gentlemen sweep, of course, right? We come back, we win every game. We have all the momentum. You know, I think we go to the Celtics. They have no chance. We're celebrating our banner right now. You and I would not be having this podcast because we would be, you know, celebrating still. We'd be rerouting the parade route right now. Everything changes. You and I, one of us wins the lottery. You know, everything breaks well if that changes.
Yeah, I think you're doing a bit because I think nothing changes. The only thing that changes is they lose in six games instead of five. They probably split in Dallas. I don't like. Them getting blown out in game five wasn't because they lost the first two games at home. It's because they were tired. And they like John Krasinski has said this in his reporting that they kind of didn't realize how much of the grind when they beat Denver that took everything from them. And they didn't realize like, oh, we're halfway. We have accomplished half the amount of playoff wins to win a title. And that's the experience. That's good experience. It kind of sucks to hear as a fan that played a role, but I think ultimately they just lose game five and they get blown out in game five, maybe game six is close, but ultimately, I mean, it would have made for a more fun series coming back, right? Potentially 2-2.
You got to let me live a little bit though. You know, we got to entertain this. That was the one thing that changed. Now in true Timberwolves fashion is most likely going to hurt us with this rule at some point in the playoffs. Yeah. I guarantee you that there's going to be a call that goes against us and they review it and they say, oh, Rudy Gobert fouled him. And then Rudy Gobert gets beat up for, oh my gosh, he made a dumb foul at the end. You know, that's most likely 99.9% going to happen.
Yeah. I will say, I'm going to try to, for this pod, bring in the Minnesota sports history to it. In 2008, the Twins were tied for a playoff spot with Chicago. And so back then, they would play an extra game. That's just how baseball works. And they decided where the home field for that game would be on a coin toss. And the Minnesota fans were like, well, what the heck? We had the head-to-head tiebreaker. We should get the home field. Well, the next year, they are also tied, this time with Detroit for the final game, and they get the home game in what ends up being the final, regular season game of the Metrodome. So I agree with you that Minnesota sports, it's like, it's going to come back to bite us, but there is a precedent for immediately helping as well. So we'll hope that this is the case for this one.
For sure.
All right, we'll move on to our next segment here. Apex Alpha will share who we think the leader of the pack was this week, who was the top dog for the Timberwolves. So obviously we're still in the offseason, so we have an offseason's worth of Apex Alpha to find. But mine has been Minnesota Mike Conley. The guy has been here, I think, all summer. I know he lives here. I'm sure he took a vacation, but he has been here pretty much all summer and has been out and about. So he volunteered at the 3M Open, which is the PGA tournament event. Came out to an event there and played in the Pro-Am. He threw out the first pitch at the Minnesota Twins game, and then the Vikings home opener blew the Gallo horn. So he has been all over the place, and including was on Dan Barrero of KFan today. So I think that's really cool that a damn near 20-year NBA veteran has just really embraced living in Minnesota. Obviously, he's a family man, so setting down roots is important for him. But yeah, what do you think about Minnesota Mike Conley just embracing everything Minnesota?
Last season, he came out on a boat with the new City Edition jerseys, right? And that was, he had just been here for like less than half a season, you know? Right. And I think that's what people love so much about him is that he is someone that cares. Like he doesn't have to do this. He doesn't have to stay here. And yes, he has kids and he wants to like establish his roots. But I think that goes so much to show like the character of who he is, right? And that does get me excited about the type of mentor that he is, right? Like, invest back in those that invest in you. And so I can totally see that coming, you know, in the locker room, right? He has a new protege now, you know, in Rob Dillingham, that, you know, hopefully he can continue to, you know, show him like, this is how you be a pro. This is how you do it. Like, this is really how you get a city rallied behind you, a city to really buy into you. And so, you know, I'm so happy to see him doing this. You know, he's a guy that, you know, does it. You can tell, like, he does it because he wants to. This isn't an obligation for him. This isn't something that he has to do. You know, he appreciates it. So, yeah, I'd love to see it. Minnesota Mike, for sure.
Yeah, I'm guessing you mentioned Dillingham. I'm guessing, I don't know if I saw this reported or if it's just speculation, that Dillingham's locker will be next to Conley's this season. I think so, I'll be at media day on Monday, so if we're in the locker room for that, I'll check it out. Maybe note which lockers are next to who as far as the new people. But yeah, I just think Mike is such a key for this team because he's really the only point guard on the team other than rookies. So they're going to rely on him a lot. I'm guessing he won't play as many games this year. He said last year he was trying to play 82 games and then a back-to-back in Boston where they had to fly up the morning of the game from Orlando, ruined that. But yeah, they just need him. They need him in his presence, whether it's on the court or not.
Ryan, I don't know what you're talking about, him being the only point guard. If you didn't see, the Timberwolves signed Trevor Keels to an Exhibit 10 contract. So that's another point guard that may be on the team soon. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, 100%. I agree with you.
Yeah, I did not realize Keels is technically a point guard. So that's my bad.
I don't think he is.
All right, Leo, who is your apex alpha for this offseason?
My apex alpha of this first edition of this is a Timberwolves social media team. They have been just putting out freaking heater after heater right now. They're keeping the fans entertained. There's these 30-second workout reels that they've been posting, sometimes even two a day sometimes, where when I saw Joe Ingles in a little practice like t-shirt, you know, he's not showing any skin that he doesn't have to, launching up some trebuchet threes, throwing some passes. Like, I don't know if these passes are going the right place. I don't know if these shots are going in, but I'm seeing Joe Ingles play basketball. And that's huge for me as someone that was really excited to watch him play in the Olympics. Instead, he collected DMP after DMP. And I heard that the Australian faithful were pissed off. They're like, why is he on the team? It should have been so-and-so on the team. Instead, I was like, is Joe Ingles cooked? Does he have legs still? Can he play basketball? And to see that was big. Another big one that I saw that they put out was just recently, they put out a couple actually, but today I think they put out Rob Dillingham in the weight room again. That is like something that I know we all need to see. I would like to see him at a buffet first and then hitting the weight room after. But in the meantime, like, I'll take weight room because he's got to put some weight on. So, you know, the social media team, they know what they're doing. You know, they know what they're doing. They know what the fans want to see. And that's kept me excited for sure.
Yeah, my favorite social media content is just when they post like Game 7 highlights from Denver. Those are great. And then it gets me down a rabbit hole. Now I'm watching the Phoenix series. Now I'm watching Ant hit his head on the backboard in Indiana. They do have to be careful. One social media faux pas that they did in the playoffs was after the Denver series, they put out, our guys are working out right here after the game. and that unfortunately is something that the Phoenix Suns did themselves, I believe, and were immediately knocked out of the playoffs in a separate year. But yeah, this offseason, they've been great. A lot of guys have been in camp and in town all summer. So they changed their profile picture to Nas Reed with a weird filter, and they've been doing all that sort of stuff.
The goofy stuff is good. We need the goofy stuff. We need the sizzle reels. You know, I will say that there was, you know, you're talking about posting these workout videos after games. I covered the game where it was a game before the Rudy Gobert, Draymond Green choke gate. But I went to a game in Golden State, the Timberwolves played there, and it's a regular game, not IST. And after the game was over, they were in the outside the locker room in the hallway, and they were working out. And I had my phone. And for like 2 seconds, I put my hand into my pocket to grab my phone. And I'm like, I could record this and post it and be like, look at them working out live right after the game. I was like, no. Don't be that guy. Don't do it. And then lo and behold, the social media team does it anyways. But that said, they're still my apex alpha of the week.
Absolutely. For sure. All right, next segment, Play of the Week. During the season, we'll relive our favorite play of the week, or also a time that the Wolves made someone their prey, P-R-E-Y. Leo, what do we got for this?
Oh, this is easy one for me. The prey of the week, the person that was a victim for the Timberwolves during the offseason, is none other than the big Shaqtus himself. Shaquille O'Neal is my prey of the week. Let me give you a little bit of a breakdown for those of you who haven't been following on social media. Maybe you're taking a cleanse during, you know, August and September. Mm-hmm. You haven't been paying attention. But as many of us know, Shaquille O'Neal has been extremely critical of Rudy Gobert throughout his entire career. This isn't a Timberwolves-centric thing. But I think Shaq is a prey of the week because Rudy is living rent-free in his head. The Timberwolves are living rent-free in Shaq's head because on September 6th, in a complex interview, they asked Shaq, who do you think is like the worst player in the league, like the worst player of all time, basically. And then he goes, again, without hesitation, Rudy Gobert. He said he's a bum. He said he's not worth the contract he's on. And it's like, okay, like that's kind of Shaq's bit. Like we're used to that. Every couple months, we'll hear him talk about Rudy. A couple days later that week, Rudy Gobert responds. He quote tweets it and he says, hey, like, you know, it's disappointing to see a legend like Shaq that has to, you know, disparage, you know, another player, you know, to really get some, you know, engagement out there. Like, I don't know why he has to do this. And, you know, he's keeping it real. He's not saying, oh, I hate Shaq, I'm gonna beat him up. He's just like, hey, like, I don't know why he keeps talking about me. I'm not talking about him. Now, fast forward a couple of days later, just when he thought it was over, I don't know the name of the podcast, but it's the one with Udonis Haslem and Mike Miller. They have Shaq on there. And Shaq says that Rudy Gobert is just being sensitive. You know, I have commercials. I don't need to talk about Rudy Gobert to be relevant. It's like, okay, dude, all right, this is like two times in 2 weeks you're doing this. And when you think it's over, 2 days later on his own, the Big Shaqtus podcast or whatever, the big podcast, whatever he calls his own, he talks about how he would have put his hands on Rudy Gobert if they were on the same team. He would have like beat him. He would like threaten violence with them. Mm-hmm. And he says that's how he motivates players. And it's like, what is going on in this? And it's laughable to me. I used to get annoyed by it, but it's laughable to me that one guy, a Hall of Famer, one of the best players of all time, can't stop talking about Rudy Gobert. What are your thoughts?
It's interesting to me. There's a couple just people in sports that like I don't understand why the vitriol applies to them so much. Weirdly, two of them are on the same team because Karl Anthony Towns kind of fits into that category for me as well. But for Rudy, I'm not sure what specifically Shaq, I mean, you're allowed to not like someone's game. Rudy certainly has flaws. You could call them fatal flaws about his game. But like, worst player of all time is just obviously laughable and just not true. I just don't know why. There's no one out there being like, Rudy is a greater player than Shaq of all time. No one thinks that. Like, I'm just not sure what, I mean, he mentions the money. I don't want to dig too deep into that, but maybe that is a part of it, but Rudy's not the only person making huge money compared to Shaq's time. So I don't know. I mean, I can think of worse contracts than Rudy Gobert's. And yeah, I'm not, I understand that like a lot of like Rudy doesn't have a bag, if that is what people are interested in. And generally the things that he does well and provides value for don't show up in a stat sheet or they don't show up in a highlight tape. It's the Pearson dribbling into the lane and just going, nope, I'm not going to try to shoot over Rudy Gobert. So I'm just not sure why.
I think part of it is also, I mean, his job, and I remember, I think Kevin Garnett once said this on some interview or some little video feature where he's like, my job is not to get you to like me. You know, he's talking about the way that he plays defense and how he kind of trash talks. And it's like, he expects players not to like him because that lets him know he's doing a good job. He's stopping players from trying to score the ball. And so I can understand, like, I mean, Rudy's a four-time defensive player of the year. Of course, there's going to be players that are going to be like, man, like, screw this guy. He's keeping me from scoring my points. He's keeping me from a better contract. So there's that angle. I think additionally is, you know, a little bit of like the xenophobia here where it's like, you know, mm-hmm. oh man, like this guy's French. You know, he's not an American guy. He's French. He's large, he's biracial. You know, I think there's more things that we don't have to dive too deep into, but I think that is a piece of it as well too, where it's like, he's not like the guys that we're used to seeing, you know, play center. And I think that could be part of it.
Yeah. It's obviously, it's certainly a part of it, but it's obviously not the part of it because Victor doesn't get the same thing. And I think a lot of those,
that's true.
Those apply to him. So it's obviously a part of it, but like, it's something else too. And it's a combination of weird things. And what kind of stinks the most is that with the aforementioned Luka shot over him in game two, overshadowed what was a fantastic season for him guarding in space. We know he's uncomfortable out there, but I think he is willing to kind of get embarrassed more than other players. Or maybe the Wolves are more willing to let him go out there and guard your point guards out there and in space. Whether it was Beal or Booker in the Phoenix series or Murray in the Denver series, he did a good job in those spots. And if the barometer for good defender is not letting Luka score, then they all stink.
Yeah, no one's. Yeah, exactly. It's like everyone has had, not everyone, but most great defenders have had great offensive players score on them. Like I don't see why, and it sucks because it does push that narrative of like, oh, look at him cooking the four-time defensive player of the year. You know, I will say for the record, I do want to say I am not a Rudy Gobert super fan. He is not my mm-hmm. favorite player on the team. He's not my, you know, even one of my top three favorite players on the team. You know, you can go back and say a little bit about, oh, well, there was a whole COVID-19 thing and him making light of it, the touching of microphones. Yep. So, you know, to me, that's warranted because that was, you know, pretty uncalled for. And, you know, he has some questionable views on some things that I don't agree with, but yeah. The dislike around him is very rarely about that. It's about how terrible he is, how like unworthy of his contract he is, and things like that.
Yeah, and I think bringing it back to Kat too, the one thing that both of those guys have done, and they've gotten, Kat doesn't get the vitriol from, well, he kind of does get it from Shaq too. Shaq always wants him to go post in the paint, and meanwhile, all Wolves fans are like, "Can you shoot like 10,000 threes?" But one thing those two both do is they take the high road. Kat never, the one thing I think Kat should always get credit for is he never like fought back with Jimmy. Maybe he did on the court, like when the few times right. Jimmy has actually played against the Wolves, but he's always taken the high road when the Jimmy stuff was at its peak. He was just quiet. Once they decided to trade Jimmy, he accepted the contract offer, that they just extended his new extension off of that one starts this year. I just think it's interesting that both of those guys have taken the high road, and also their teammates all seem to get along with them. I mean, maybe Kyle Anderson is a bad example, although that was a one-time thing. I don't think from what I saw, they got along fine in every other scenario.
They kissed the next season. That's right. You tell me they're not friends.
Yeah. I'm sure they're fine. I mean, yeah. So I just think, I'm not sure what can even be done about Wolves fans. It'll be interesting to see if they boycott the TNT stuff this year. I thought there's a difference between like Shaq and those guys talking crap about players. But when they brought Draymond on, and a current NBA player that clearly has a vendetta about this person, and they just let him rant, I don't know that this is speculation. I'll be very clear, I don't know anything, but like, I think they just like either the Wolves complained or they, when Draymond wasn't on the set for game 5, I think the Wolves had something to do with that. I think they were like, no, you can't just have this guy talking crap about our player on national television.
Imagine Bill Laimbeer being brought on to call Larry Bird game. You know, imagine Isaiah Thomas being called up to call or to analyze a Michael Jordan game. It's like that would never happen. Like there is so much history there, you know? And so, yeah, that really rubbed me the wrong way. And, you know, I love the fact that they, you know, the Timberwolves organization, I assume, you know, stepped up to the plate, because I doubt Draymond Green turned down the opportunity to talk trash about Rudy Gobert in Minnesota, you know? So it very obviously had to have been some intervention there. But, you know, that said, yeah, I 100% agree with you, especially on that point about Kat, is that always a professional, you know, through and through. A little bit of trash talk on the court, you know, that's fine. That happens. But in terms of like just trying to disparage someone, you know, trying to tear down at someone's character, he has never been that. He's even gone on record. I think it was last year, I think it's last offseason. It was a podcast talking about how, you know, him and Jimmy, like he doesn't have beef with Jimmy. Like, you know, he's thankful for him for helping bring the playoffs back to Minnesota that year. You know, he's been nothing but complimentary of that. And I think, you know, in this day and age in social media where they want to push negativity, you know, that's what sells, right? Yep. Beef. Hey, I don't like this guy. This guy said this, like what? It's like, let's push positivity. And that's what Kat promotes. That's what Rudy, you know, for all his faults, that's what he promotes. You know, and that's what Mike Connolly, I love that. You know, even Anthony Edwards, like, yeah, he'll talk trash, but you know, it's never personal with them. It's never like, oh yeah, I'm gonna beat this guy up, or this guy is like a bad person. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, KD, Ant just talked unlimited crap to KD during that series, and the indelible image of that series is KD smiling back at Ant while he is just ripping his team's soul out of its body. Like, that's fun. And even like if Jimmy comes to town and there's some fun trash talkery, I don't know, like that'll be fun too. But it's just like when it's Shaq and they're just like, I don't understand it. So we can move on from that one, I guess. All right, next segment, playtime. This will be one where we take our Wolves hat off. We look around the NBA, roll around in the grass a little bit, see what's going on in other necks of the woods. So my topic here, the consensus top four in the West is pretty clearly, this seems to be, everybody agrees, OKC, Denver, Dallas, and the Wolves in some order. So just numbers say that will almost certainly not be the top four in the West. One team or more will kind of fall off, whether that's in the regular season or in the playoffs, maybe. Leo, which team or teams do you think, kind of Wolves included, maybe, have the chance to kind of fall out and not repeat their successful seasons?
Yeah, I think, you know, I can understand, you know, all four of those teams on why, and they all have a case, you know, for why they should be, you know, the elite. But if I had to pick one team, let me just give you my full ranking. At the top, I have Denver making a surprise bounce back season, even though they're losing players. The second, I have the Timberwolves. The third, I have the Mavericks. And then in fourth, and, you know, call it a hot take, I have the Oklahoma City Thunder falling fourth or worst at the end of the Western Conference standings. And the reason why is because they had incredibly great injury luck last year. Their top seven players in minutes played per game played at least 70 games. None of those other teams that we mentioned had that. Their starting five that they played the most, I think by the end of it against the Mavericks, they had started benching Josh Giddey. But for, you know, 95% of the season, they had started Josh Giddey with, you know, the rest of the four starters. That starting five played 63 games together. The other three teams didn't even eclipse 50. Like, you even look at the Mavericks, obviously they made a big trade, but their starting five only played 16 games together. And so, again, I'm not wishing injury luck. We never want to see injuries, but I think last year they did get a bit lucky. They got a ton of time to gel. And then not only do I feel like that might be a little bit different this year, just, you know, because again, you never know how the cookie's going to crumble, but they're also adding new players too. So they're going to tinker with their starting lineup a little bit. It's not going to be 63 games of the same starting five all the time. So I think OKC maybe drop out. What about you?
Yeah, with OKC, I kind of agree. If they had rolled back with the same team, I would be very low on them. I just think that even if they have worse injury luck, that their regular season, they are just going to be a monster. Even if they're missing a guy here or a guy there, swapping Giddey for Caruso is just, like, that's such a big thing. Giddey was just so bad for them down the stretch of last year. Not as bad as a regular season player because teams are less likely to really isolate.
Sure.
The offensive weakness there. But I just think that they're just going to win a ton of regular season games. I have playoff questions for them. Just that, like, is Shea ready to be the number one? Like, they just haven't played. They played two playoff series last year, one against a depleted Pelicans team, and then they lost to a very good Mavericks team. At least that's what the Wolves fans will tell you. They're very good. And they were very good in that series too. I just don't know, as a playoff team, are they ready? Like, the same thing I said about the Wolves, where they kind of didn't realize how much work there was left to be done. Do the Oklahoma City Thunder have that? Because who in their rotation has played in a conference finals? Caruso, that's a good point. Caruso and Hartenstein has probably played in a few more playoff series than some others. I just wonder that if they're ready for that, and if, like, if Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren are ready for that step up. I mean, they played pretty well in the playoffs. I'm sure Oklahoma City Thunder fans are like, what do you mean? We're great. I mean, you are, yeah. It'd be my pick to finish top in the Western Conference. But Denver, I'm almost the opposite. In the regular season, I am incredibly worried for them. You talk about injuries, and again, I don't want to see Nikola Jokic get hurt, but he really hasn't had an injury his entire career. And certainly his play style is the number one reason for that. And probably just his body type and whatever else. But I just wonder what if he has to miss 2 weeks because he rolled his ankle? That team is, I mean, any team without their best player is going to look bad, but, like, they're just going to hemorrhage losses. If if Jokic has to miss games. And their beat people talked about how they really went after the number one seed, and that hurt them in the playoffs, that they got tired in game seven or game six. Do they kind of let their foot off the gas, let the seedings play out, and they'll be back for the playoffs?
Well, in your calculus, I'm assuming you're not buying a MVP Russell Westbrook bounce back year, are you?
Not really. I mean, it's like, in and of itself, rest on the minimum is fine. Like, he can run your second unit. He can exploit certain matchups. It's fine. But is he either, they're like sixth or seventh man? I'm just very dubious that that's going to be anything more than just like a fine enough pickup.
I would wager, you know, I wouldn't bet, but in theory, I would wager my Candace Hoopis points that Russell Westbrook will not be on the team by the trade deadline.
Trade deadline. For the Nuggets. They'll trade him to Utah again, where he gets cut from Utah.
Yeah,
he'll get cut.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that's going to work out. Just the way that he plays, you know, I understand, like, you know, the potential, the idea of it. But no, I get it. I get it. I mean, me putting the Nuggets number one was more of like a, I'm going against the grain here. You know, I don't want to doubt the best player in the NBA for the last, you know, three or four seasons here. But yeah, I could absolutely see that. You know, as far as, you know, teams that we didn't mention, the other, you know, other than those top four, my biggest fear for the Timberwolves come, you know, playoff time is a team that's probably going to be in the first round, a team that runs and guns and plays at high, fast pace, got shooters spaced out everywhere. Now, it's not to say that any of the teams in the top four don't do that, but that's reminiscent of a Sacramento Kings, a New Orleans Pelicans. You remember how fearful fans were, and even, you know, media members were, of drawing the Pelicans in the first round, like, please don't, please don't. And again, I understand they were injured last year, and, you know, Zion's always an enigma. You know, I know they have, you know, DeJounte Murray this year, but at the same time, those are the teams that, you know, the Wolves have traditionally struggled against. And so I'm more worried about, you know, getting past the first round opponent that is in that lower echelon, as opposed to maybe one that finishes top four in the West.
Yeah, what do you think about Sac? That's kind of your hometown squad. They brought in DeMar, swapped out H. Barnes. I personally don't love the DeMar acquisition. I just don't think that really fits with what they're doing. To me, it wasn't a surprise last year that they kind of didn't have the season that they had the year prior, the original Light the Beam team, just because their defense was so bad and their offense was unsustainably good, I would call it. Just that, like, even, I don't remember where they finished last year, but like, even if they finished top five, their defense wasn't going to be able to hold them up. So to me, that's not necessarily a team I would worry about from a Wolves perspective.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the Kings, yeah, I mean, that is my hometown team. You know, my best friend does media for the Kings, you know. It is a team that, yeah, it's going to be an interesting year because they're finally pivoting away a little bit from that, just like, all right, just all offense, like no defense. I'm not saying DeMar DeRozan is going to bring a ton of defense. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of is what he is. But, you know, they lost so many games in the fourth quarter just because they couldn't close out games. Like, you know, De'Aaron Fox, as good as he is, you know, I know he won the Clutch Player of the Year award. Yeah. What was it, 2 years ago or the first time? Yeah. But yeah, last year he didn't have those same numbers. They didn't have that success. And I think bringing DeMar in will help. But yeah, I mean, you do bring up a valid point that, you know, he will slow down that ball movement a little bit. He's more of a like, all right, let me look over the defense once I get the ball in my hand, dribble down, pound it down, pound it down. But yeah, so it'll be an interesting year for them. You know, it's hard to say they're going to get worse than last year, but it does remind me, I mean, actually going back one more thing about the Thunder, about how you mentioned about them doing well, is that I do think, you know, there will be playoff struggles for them because there are steps to it. You know, just like the Timberwolves are saying, like last year was a step for them. They went from the first round all the way to the conference finals. They kind of skipped a step a little bit. Well, the Thunder, I mean, their first step was winning a first round, right? And then that came with finishing first in the Western Conference, a favorable matchup. But then there's steps to it. I don't think they're going to emerge from that first round all the way out of it again, because we know how hard that was for the Timberwolves to do that. But, you know, again, I do see those struggles in the playoffs coming for them.
Yep. Reminds me of Kat after the Denver game. He was asked, they were basically, the question was that, like, you guys have taken these steps. Traditionally, it's hard to do. And Kat just goes, how much you want us to lose? That is a memory I'll have forever. Just like, damn, I've been here for a decade. We've been losing every time. Like,
that's true.
But it is true because they didn't play as well in the Western Conference Finals as they had the previous two rounds. One team I'm very interested in as someone who likes college basketball is the Memphis Grizzlies, because they drafted Zach Edey. And I think like a lot of people look at Zach Edey and be like, that is a guy that is good for college basketball, but doesn't translate to the NBA. And I wonder if he can kind of break that mold a little bit. One thing that he does really well is he plays a ton of minutes. And obviously he won't play starters minutes for Memphis. But like he would play, I think in their big tournament games for Purdue, he was playing all 40 minutes or darn near close. He would really only sit with fouls. And I just wonder if they can get him mobile just enough to not be just a complete liability on defense. And obviously he's like, if they can get him close to the basket, he'll be great on defense. And it'll be interesting to see. They've struggled with rebounding when they play Triple J at center. But I think they're another team that, like, when they have their guys, and it seems like they're going to have Ja, Bane, and Jaren Jackson to start this year, like, the last time they had those guys, they were printing out wins in the regular season. Yeah. And the kind of guys that tanked that season for them, like Dylan Brooks, are no longer on the team. They've replaced it with a similar kind of presence as Marcus Smart. But, I mean, they're going to be in the play-in mix at the very least, and I would pick them for top six. I would probably say. What do you think about Memphis?
Yeah, I mean, that's Memphis is. It feels like, you know, a lot of people's dark horse this year, because a lot of people have forgotten them. And even right now, when we were talking about it, I'm like, that's right, Marcus Smart is on the team, because even though he was there all season, he hardly played. Same thing due to injuries, or quote unquote injuries, is they're kind of tanking away. And I actually have a real bet with somebody on Zach Edey. For me, I'm betting that Zach Edey will not win Rookie of the Year. He thinks he will win Rookie of the Year. Now, that obviously is going to leverage a lot on whether how far the Grizzlies make it, you know, in terms of their standings. Yep. But at the same time, yeah, I totally get it. The Grizzlies are a team that I would love to see in the first round, just as far as storylines go. Now, it won't be an easy matchup, and hopefully, you know, we won't get them. But if we do, there's going to be a lot. It's like round two, right? This is Rocky 2, right? You know, first year, you know, or second year Anthony Edwards out here. Was this his second or third year? I think it was his junior year, I think, Anthony Edwards, when we played the Grizzlies. Either way, you know, he took his first playoff loss against the Grizzlies. You know, we had it in the bag, but we kind of just let slip away due to inexperience, and we get him again. That's Rocky 2, baby. Like, that's time for us to take him back on. We have a little bit more experience. We have that taste of loss against them. And so that would be great to see. But I do think, yeah, there are a lot of intriguing pieces of Memphis. It's just whether or not they can stay on the court, whether it's injuries or just, you know, off the court shenanigans, you know, as we know that could happen with Ja Morant. But yeah, that is a great team to kind of keep your eye on. Yeah.
To kind of round out the West, I think Dallas will be the same. They probably won't win too many more than 52, 48 games in that range. And when you got Luka, you're going to be a playoff monster. So they might have some struggles, but I wouldn't worry about them, or they shouldn't worry about their team. Phoenix, we'll see what Tyus and Monte can bring. But ultimately the Wolves swept them. They didn't bring in a ton of talent. I wouldn't be terribly worried. Pelicans don't have a center. They're going to play Zion at center. So we'll see what that looks like. In short bursts, that's obviously going to be very, very good for them. And if they're playing small against the Wolves playing big, that'll be an interesting matchup.
Well, Zion averages like 45 points against the Timberwolves, right?
Yeah.
Or something close to. So, yeah, I mean, that scares me in itself.
And then to kind of round out the playoff teams, you got the Lakers and Warriors, your Cali teams out there for you. I looked and they have like the Lakers are fifth in Western Conference Finals odds and the Warriors are like seventh or eighth. And I'm just like, the Cowboys always get a bump in betting odds.
That's a
like
bet.
Those are not the bets I would be looking for. I can't even bet out here in Minnesota, but those would not be ones I would be targeting if I was looking to win some money. I guess the real dark horse would be the Spurs. We saw Victor in the Olympics and he is just, I don't know if the team, what Chris Paul's got for him out there, but he's going to be very good very soon, as in right now. And if they can, I didn't understand why they weren't playing Trey Jones at point guard more often. I'm sure. And I just think they're going to be much better with Chris Paul and Trey Jones basically playing what I would assume is pretty much every point guard minute.
Yeah, I think the Spurs, well, I mean, it's kind of a low bar, but I mean, they'll be better than last year for sure. I think Chris Paul, obviously playing a real point guard, you know, the Jeremy Sohan experiment hopefully has ended at point guard over there. But yeah, bring in, you know, Chris Paul in, having a steady hand, Harrison Barnes. I mean, I get what they're doing, right? This is like a total Spurs, like, we're bringing in pros. We want Wemby to learn from the pros and to have like a solid foundation. And they're intentionally not bringing in, you know, the win now pieces. And so I think just by construction, you know, I'm a little down. I mean, I'm not that excited for, you know, Stephen Castle or Stephon Castle. Like, you know, those there's still some pieces like Keldon Johnson. I'm still like, is he a winning player? Like Devin Vassell, like he's good, but is he great? You know, so I still have my question marks about them. I do think, you know, that they'll probably threaten for a play-in team as a play-in team, but I don't know. And that's, you know, a little bit also by design because of how terrible that, you know, Utah and Portland is probably going to be, that there's, you know, only so many spots that you could be not in the playoff, in the play-in tournament. So yeah, they will be intriguing to watch. And yeah, when you have Wemby, anything is possible, you know, trademark Kevin Garnett, but you know, I'm intrigued.
Yep, for sure. And they round out the Western Conference here, Houston. I they'll probably have a similar season. Kind of had an upstart season last year, but even the play-in in a West is going to be tough. If they're in the East, they could probably make the playoffs, but unfortunately they're in the West. Utah, the question is, are they going to mid-season tank again? Are they going to be accidentally good and tank again? And then speaking of tanking, the Portland Trailblazers will likely finish last in the West. All right, with that, we'll move on to our final second segment. Two words. Leo, what are your two words to round us out?
My two words are big expectations. Big expectations. We're 1 week away, as I mentioned at the beginning of the pod, from Media Day. And that's where we're going to get those quotables. I mean, those are the things that, you know, Kat is always known for, that Ant is currently known for, like these loud remarks of this is our time, this is what we're going to do. People are going to roll their eyes at us. But for the first time in God knows how many years, we're finally going to have a little bit more punch to these quotes that we have. You know, we have some evidence to back up the fact that we are a threat. We are here now. We should be in contention right now. And so the expectations are big right now. I don't know how much bigger they can get from here. I mean, coming off our conference finals appearance, you know, I want to knock on wood here and not say, you know, 2004 after the three Wolves, the Sprewell Cassell Wolves, you know, they had big expectations. They missed the playoffs, right? And so those expectations tanked quickly, you know, when Sprewell was playing around on his yacht, not being able to afford groceries. You know, Sam Cassell was pissed off about not getting a contract. Like those expectations nosedive really fast. And so their biggest expectations were also heading into the year. And so I think that is the big expectations that I have is right now for the Timberwolves. And once the season kicks off, preseason, everything like that, we'll start seeing like, what are the Timberwolves really made of? Is Rob Dillingham really ready to play meaningful minutes? Is Joe Ingles alive? You know, how are we going to replace, you know, Kyle Anderson's minutes? You know, those are things that we're going to be looking at, and then we can temper the expectations from there. But for me, it's big expectations for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, it's a big season because the payroll questions loom. They've kind of painted over it here. The ownership question looms. I think November is when the arbitration happens for that. So it's a big season. They could, in theory, win the title. They have the team to do that. And they have, in this tough Western Conference, they could fall out of the top six playoff picture. I would be pretty surprised that they missed the playoffs altogether. But really, anything is possible, good or bad. And if they have a bad season, you're going to be looking at probably financially making some big changes, whether it's the bigs or I don't know. Yeah, important stuff. My two words are Minnesota Lynx. The Lynx have had a fantastic season, even by their standards. They're four-time WNBA champion standards. We record this Tuesday night. Tomorrow night, we got game two, looking to, as Fee put it, end Taurasi's career. And then she immediately walked that back as to not end up on the bulletin board. But I just think it's important that just the fans have rallied around that team and around the W in general. The Lynx were sold out in the lower bowl for game one. The crowd was awesome. And they'll probably have a similar crowd for game two, hoping to move on to the next round. And I just think that's kind of an under reported thing with this, with the ownership stuff, is the Lynx are included too. They're in this ownership stuff. I would in theory like the owners have shown up for the, I mean, Glenn's there every night, but the Lori and A-Rod, I'd like them to be a little bit more involved with the Lynx, although I'm sure they're not trying to step on Glenn's shoes as to ruin their arbitration case. But yeah, the Minnesota Lynx, it'd be really, really fun to have them go on a run and lead us right into Wolf season off a fun run.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't been watching the WNBA this season or before, like, now's the perfect time to get into this. I mean, by the time you're hearing this, where the Lynx are, knock on wood, moving on to the second round, they are a drama-free team. You know, in a season full of drama, of the Caitlin Clark this, Angel Reese that, the, you know, Asia Wilson talk about this or that, the Lynx have been a drama-free team where they've really just put out quality product of basketball on both ends of the court. And they're so fun to watch. And it's so great to see this level of just being competence at all levels there, on management down to the players. The fans are great there. The atmosphere is great. I made my way down to a Lynx game earlier this year. Even in a loss, it was a great atmosphere. It was so much fun. Everyone's into the game. So if you haven't gone, you should go.
Yeah, absolutely. Me and my family went to camp day. That was a weekday afternoon. I've been to camp day a couple of times, full of kids, and they know every word to every song that is played on the loudspeaker. Fun times, but ear shattering as well. But yeah, we're looking for a Lynx win, game two. If they can't get it done, hope that they can. It wouldn't be the first time a Minnesota team has knocked Phoenix out of the playoffs down in Phoenix. So, but we'll hope to get it done here at home. But that's where we're going to wrap up our first pod here. Kind of the schedule moving forward. We're going to record once a week here. Like I said, I'm going to Media Day Monday. So we'll do another episode after that later in the week. We'll see you guys then.